This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, it's back, 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 back again. Sadie's back, back, back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back?
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up. Could the 2021 college football season, which begins tomorrow, turn out to be like the 2007 college football season? Get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio. Good to have football back. Let me tell you, I am looking forward to watching Fresno State and UConn tomorrow. And oh, can't wait for watching Eastern Illinois and Indiana State. I've been waiting all summer for that game. Can't wait for that matchup. It's about time we get to week zero so that I can watch UTEP and New Mexico State. And I love that offense at San Jose State. Can't wait to see that matchup with Southern Utah. If we are going to do this week zero thing, can we at least put like one really intriguing game? Maybe you tell me that's Nebraska-Illinois, but those two programs won't be much this year, which could lead to a good game because they could both be somewhat evenly matched. And for that UConn-Fresno State game, a 2 p.m. kick out in California tomorrow. Kickoff temperature is supposed to be 102 degrees, plus they play on turf. Now, it is like a dry heat, right? So I guess it's not too bad. But how about that? You go out to play a football game, 102 degrees, plus factor in the heat index on the turf for the feel-like temperature on the field as you begin the season here late August. That doesn't seem like good scheduling or timing either. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500. The Morrow Midday Show is brought to you by Baker Roofing. They have been in business for over 100 years, and they are one of the largest, most recognized roofing contractors in the U.S. They provide residential and commercial roofing. In 1915, Baker Roofing Company was founded on the promise of always good work. Give our friend Matt Johnson, General Manager of Baker Roofing Charleston, a call, or head on over to BakerRoofing.com for more information. Check out their incredible history at BakerRoofing.com and see all the different roofing types that are available online at BakerRoofing.com. Over 100 years of always good work. Baker Roofing, bringing you the Morrow Midday Show each and every day.
Now, you mentioned Nebraska earlier.
Yeah.
You know, you're not expecting much out of them this year.
Mm-mm.
Now, if the Big 12 comes calling and say, hey, I want you to come back, do you think they might seriously consider it, or do you think their program's probably making too much money being a member of the Big Ten?
Yeah, that's why I don't know if they would consider it. It'd probably be best for their program. I think they'd do better off in the Big 12, not only from a competitive standpoint, but from a recruiting standpoint. That's what always happens with these random teams, like West Virginia as well. I always share, because I grew up a UConn fan, so I saw it kind of firsthand. UConn joins the AAC, and they're playing in Texas. They're playing all over the place. And UConn couldn't wait to get back in the Big East because it helps in recruiting. You want to play in those states that you're recruiting anyways. And then not only that, but you play close games to home. Family can come actually see some of your road games. They don't have to get on a flight down to Texas cross country when you're recruiting kids from the Northeast. Eventually, UConn said, all right, we got to get out of here. We got to go back to the Big East. It's going to help us in our recruiting. That's the area we recruit. We don't want to go play in Texas. We don't recruit in Texas. Why are we going over there? Nobody cares to see us over there. And it's similar in Nebraska, is that they still kind of recruit like they're the Big 12, but they're playing in the Big 10, and I think they'd be better off in the Big 12 from a competitive standpoint, from just a program standpoint. But, of course, it always comes down to money, and the money's better in the Big 10, so I don't think they would actually leave. But remember, last year during the pandemic, right, wasn't Nebraska, weren't they bluffing or at least suggesting, like, hey, we could go do our own thing or we could leave the Big 10? I don't think they would because of simply money. I think they – if we're talking about trying to win, what's best for winning, what's best for the actual program, money does help. But I think in terms of winning football games, yeah, you're better off back in the Big 12. Although, again, the Big 12 is a sinking ship. I don't think anybody wants to jump on that ship right now until they get some sort of momentum, some sort of movement to try to turn things around, try to save that thing. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcasts. You can also find the show on demand online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Or through our free app, search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. We opened the show talking about the start of college football season and how this year could be like 2007. 2007 was the last time we got a truly chaotic season. Since then, Alabama has taken over. They have controlled them shortly behind. Ohio State has been just fine, which they typically are. But back in 2007, we're at the tail end of USC and Pete Carroll's run. We didn't quite have Saban and Alabama just rolling, steamrolling just yet. And it was the last time we had a really interesting, unpredictable, chaotic season. Could that return this year? Now, you may say, well, if it didn't happen last year, right, when we had a pandemic, when is it ever going to happen? And that would be fair. But as I laid out earlier, you usually don't feel the effects of something right away, even like an injury. Right, or if you ever, God forbid, you ever like cut your hand open with like a knife or something by accident, right? You ever like stab yourself just by accident? Let's not get too morbid here. You may not feel it right away because of the adrenaline, or it just takes a moment and then it catches up to you. Or you ever watch a movie, you watch an action film, and they're running through the city or something, and somebody like gets shot and they don't even realize it. And then when they finally like sit down, or when things settle down, they look down and like, oh no, I'm bleeding, or I've been shot. They don't realize right away the adrenaline or the situation, or you don't feel the pain yet. It takes a little while to set in. Just like, you know, you may not feel the, for lack of a better term, the punishment. Either a lot of smoking, drinking, and carry yourself, but you shouldn't have eaten. I mean, maybe if you have a stomach ache, right? Then see the downside decisions, it catches up to you down the road. Same idea with the pandemic. You may not sense it right away, but it catches up to you. It did in football. It did in the NBA with players breaking down the fight. Now let's see college football. Because last year was more of a predictable season. Will this year be? And then you factor in all the quarterback changes, and you factor in all the experience coming back for these, which I think will help defenses, and I think will also help close the gap between the top-tier teams and the next tier of teams having that experience. I think it will help those lower-tier teams. Sure, Alabama, Clemson, they're returning some talent, but their best players all went to the draft. Meanwhile, the next teams behind them in the SEC that maybe weren't able to put as many guys into the draft, they now have fifth-year players who are playing those positions, while Alabama's breaking in new wide receivers and a new quarterback. I think it shortens that gap between the top tier and the second tier. And in 2007, we should have known what was coming when it started week one, when Appalachian State upset Michigan. And then later that year, we had Stanford beat USC as a 41-point underdog, and we had Illinois beat Ohio State, and we had LSU lose twice in triple overtime. And most notably, we had seven number two teams lose. We had the top two teams lose in the same weekend three different times. We had a new number one team for the first time that year, and we were heading into championship weekend looking at what we thought was going to be a Missouri-West Virginia national championship. Now, things still wound up to be pretty typical, because the national championship that year did end up being LSU-Ohio State, so it doesn't really stand out. But there was a chance we got pretty close. We could have had Missouri-West Virginia. So this year, could we get something similar? Maybe in the end we do wind up with an Alabama and a Clemson, but there's a couple of surprises, at least in the playoff first. Or maybe a couple of surprises in the conference championship games. We're heading into championship weekend again, talking about, ooh, this team could actually be a playoff team, depending on what happens. When you look at this year, well, those top teams have some early tests. Clemson and Georgia obviously play next Saturday. Alabama plays Miami at a neutral site next Saturday. I don't think Miami has much of a chance in that game. I would take Alabama to cover the point spread, and it's almost 20 points. But some believe that could be a real test for Alabama. I'm just not one of them. Alabama then has to play Florida week three. I think that's the more intriguing game. And while I wouldn't pick Florida to win that game, I think it is a possibility, more so than Miami. And we also heard Steve Spurrier this week, granted former Florida coach, who said, oh yeah, Florida, they're going to beat Alabama week three. I can understand why he would feel that way. But give Florida somewhat of a chance. And then meanwhile, Ohio State starts on Thursday at Minnesota, which I think is a trickier game than some believe. Then they play Oregon the final week. I believe that's a neutral site game. The Big Ten, I think, will be better this year. There's a chance for some of these top programs to maybe suffer some early losses. And if they do, there's an interesting next group of teams. We've been talking about this throughout the afternoon. Interesting next group of teams that could slide in and get into a spot we're not used to seeing. For example, Texas A&M is sixth in the country to begin. You have Alabama, Georgia, and then Texas A&M in the SEC. They have not been ranked number one since the 50s. Who knows? There's a few losses early on. Maybe they beat Alabama at home. I think that game's in October. And they become the number one team. Or number 10, UNC. Spent a single week as the number one team in 1948. Now, they won't have much of a chance, I don't think, early on. They do begin the year ranked 10th. They'll face Miami in October. And then you'd have to wait till like the ACC title game to face a Clemson to try to get to that number one seed. I don't think beating up on the other ACC teams would propel them to the number one spot. But we haven't seen UNC get up there since the 40s. We haven't seen UNC ranked this high in about 25 years. Iowa State begins this year with their highest ranking ever. Some believe they could be a playoff team. Could they crack the top five or four this year? Even Cincinnati has never been ranked in the top 10 before. And similar to like an Appalachian State upset in 2007, what if Cincinnati beats, it wouldn't be as large of an upset, it wouldn't be as large of a surprise, but if they beat Indiana and Notre Dame this year, and they crack, say, the top five. Kirk Herbstreit joined us on the show earlier this week, and he was kind of their sleeper pick to potentially be a playoff team. Could we get some sort of chaotic year here in college football like 2007? Because what I find interesting, as laid out last hour, is that that next tier of teams are some unique teams that we're not used to for some of those stats I just gave you. But if it's not Oklahoma, the standard of the Big 12, it could be Iowa State, who has never won 10 games before, who hasn't won the conference. If it's not Ohio State in the Big 10, it could be Indiana, a basketball school. They haven't won the Big 10 in over 60 years. If it's not Clemson in the ACC, it could be UNC, who we haven't seen perform like this since the 90s. Or even a Miami who's never won the ACC, if they find a way to beat Clemson in the ACC title game. Or Texas A&M, which has been a good program, but they've never won a conference since the 90s. Haven't won a national championship since the 30s. Could this be their year? Could Georgia finally break that streak? It's been a trend we keep talking about this afternoon on the eve of the college football season. But it's something that could transpire this year where potentially, because of the quarterback changes, because of the residual effects from the pandemic, because of all the experience coming back for some of these teams, it could be a chaotic season like we haven't seen since maybe 2007. And I'm hoping for that. I'm here for it. Bring the chaos, because that's what I'm looking for. That's what's most interesting, and I root for interesting. Plus, it's something that the sport needs. It's been unwildly, I guess. It hasn't been wild. It's been too predictable, college football has been. So I would welcome said chaos to the fold. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500. Let's go to the phones. Sam is with us. Sam, what's going on? How are you?
Good. How are you doing, sir? Hope you're doing well and healthy.
Yes, I am. I appreciate it. Hope the same for you.
Well, I had to add a comment if I can, if it's okay with you.
Of course. Go ahead.
So, I know you've been talking about North Carolina's season for football.
Yes.
How many maximum capacity are we seeing for the 2021-2022 season for the Tar Heels? Because my sister went to UNC, and I want to know if when it's college basketball startup. And I want to know if can you talk more about College of Charleston men's basketball games as well? And I want to know if the concession stands might be open.
All right, let's try. I appreciate the call, Sam. Let's try to run through those. Let me try to keep them all straight. Let's go in reverse order. College of Charleston. Hey, we've been talking about College of Charleston for their College of Charleston night tomorrow night at the Charleston Battery. We've had Pat Kelsey on the show. I really like that hire for the basketball program, so I'm looking forward to that. When does basketball season begin? How about we wait for football to begin first tomorrow? Basketball will come closer towards Halloween. I've seen the non-conference. Shh, this is a secret between you and I. I can't share it. I've seen the non-conference schedule for the Citadel. I'm looking forward to the year, and I don't remember the exact opening weekend, because I'm looking forward to college football first and foremost. Can I tell you about the concession stand for the College of Charleston? No, I cannot. But I hope it involves that dessert table that Leland Archer told us about last hour from his time in the cafeteria at College of Charleston. Bring that over to the basketball games. And then what do we start off with? UNC? I'm not sure about capacity. But what I think is interesting about UNC is, look, they're a top 10 team this year. We'll see if they can compete with Clemson, but their season comes down to that October 16th game against Miami. We know that. And what's very intriguing to me is that while UNC gets Miami at home, it's also their seventh straight game, and Miami will be coming off 16 straight days of rest. I think UNC has the better quarterback. I think UNC has obviously the home field advantage. I'm sure that'll be a full capacity game, but Miami will have the rest advantage, and a lot of times that's most crucial. That's one of the games I'm most looking forward to. I included it on our top 10 list this week of the 10 best games of college football, UNC and Miami, because that will decide, I believe, the winner of that division and the opportunity to go beat Clemson. And I think it's a very interesting game because you have two teams that are back in the fold for the first time in a while, two teams that we both think could be top 10 programs, two good offenses with good quarterbacks. It'll be at UNC. It was a shootout the last time they played. The all-time series is tied. They've always matched up well. And you have Miami, or I should say UNC, playing their seventh straight game to start the season. Granted, they'll be home for their last three of that stretch, but Miami will be about on a 2.5-week break before that game. So, Sam, whether it's 100% capacity or not, tell your sister at UNC, go to that game. Circle that game on the schedule and be there October 16th, UNC in Miami. Why don't you make a trip there, too, and go to that game? Because that's one I'm really looking forward to already on the eve of the college football season with week zero tomorrow. I know Sam's a regular to Fan Talk. I think that's the first time we've gotten him on the Morrow Midday Show. So welcome aboard, Sam. 843-721-9500. I think we got to all the questions, but I can't remember everything that was brought up. Let's go back to the phones. Richard is with us. Richard, what's going on? How are you?
How you doing, Luke?
Good. What's up?
So just as far as the ACC, yeah, UNC and Miami, I think Miami has a shot against Alabama. It really depends on how good Bryce Young is, and if they can bring up some different blitz packages and stuff. This, the first game of the year is the time you got to catch Alabama off guard if you're going to catch them.
100%. I agree with you. Now, Alabama's favored by 19. Would you take Miami with the 19-point spread?
I would take Miami. I'd still go with Alabama. There's
okay.
a chance.
All right.
There's, you know, if some, you know, if they fumble, they have some interceptions, you know, turnovers early. You know, Miami starts to get momentum. You never know. I mean, they do have talent in Miami. And I actually think Manny Diaz is a good coach. He reminds me kind of Dabo, where people are doubting him and they don't think he's that good. But I see the recruiting he's doing, and, you know, they didn't do well against Clemson last year, but his players fought the whole game. And that's what you want as a coach. And then nobody's talking about NC State and Boston College, and they were good last year. And they were two of those teams you were talking about where they got, you know, more eligibility. They got people coming back, and I think they could be pretty dangerous in the ACC as well. So thank you, Luke.
I appreciate it, Richard. Appreciate the call. Give us a call anytime. Yeah, so it's interesting. Let's focus on the ACC for a moment and on those teams that Richard just mentioned. In regards to Miami, I don't think they'll be overly competitive with Alabama week one, but of course that's when you want to get them. So I got three things I want to follow up on based off of that conversation there with Richard. Number one, yes, you want Alabama week one. It's part of the reason why I've been pushing this idea of potential chaos this year. Because you look at Clemson, they start right away with Georgia. Obviously, one of those teams is going to have to lose. In the big picture, it may not play a huge role in deciding the playoff. But one of those teams will start with a loss. At least on paper, that will be something. You look at the standings, right? Oh, they already lost a game. For Clemson, that removes their wiggle room. For Georgia, maybe that casts doubts on, is this team really a championship contender like we believe this year? Ohio State begins at Minnesota next Thursday. May not sound like much. Minnesota had a disappointing season a year ago. I write that off for the pandemic. I give them the benefit of the doubt, much like Penn State, even Michigan, some of the teams in the Pac-12. There are a few teams that underperformed last year, but I'll cut them some slack because of the pandemic. And Minnesota is the most experienced team in the country. Number one, bringing everybody back, while Ohio State is starting a first-time quarterback. If there's ever a chance to get Ohio State, you want to get them in that first game. On the road against the most experienced team, that one I'm very interested in. I would put Ohio State on upset alert on Thursday against Minnesota. Now watch them go in by 30 and make me look like an idiot. Also then, Ohio State plays Oregon, which won't be a walk in the park either. Oregon, I think, will be pretty tough this year. For Alabama, after Miami, then you go to Florida week three. You jump right into the SEC schedule. I think that's a more intriguing game than the Miami game. You always want to get these teams early. One of the old cliches of the Morrow Midday Show is that week one's the biggest toss-up in football, and that's the case this year with some actual interesting games in week one. Then, on to the ACC teams that were brought up. Yes, Miami, year three of Manny Diaz. I don't know if I would compare him to Dabo, but he has improved the team from year one to year two, and year three is the third year. That's when coaches typically take off. If you go back and you look at a lot of coaches, it's why Mack Brown, right, the belief at UNC, same idea, third year. This is the point where they're ready to take that big step forward. If you go back and you look, a lot of coaches, it's that third season that they really take a big step forward. This is year three for Diaz at Miami. Most of his guys are there. He now has settled on his offensive coordinator, who's back from a year ago. De'Ara King is like a sixth-year quarterback at this point. It's not his first year in the program. I lean more towards UNC over Miami in the Coastal, but that's going to be a fascinating game on October 16th. And then the other teams that were brought up, NC State and Boston College. I do like Boston College. I like Boston College more than I like NC State this year. Now, earlier this week, we ran through the potential speed bumps. I think this was on Monday's show. The potential speed bumps for Clemson in the ACC schedule. When Clemson does slip up in the conference, it's usually on the road. And if you look at their road schedule, NC State and Pittsburgh were the two games that I mentioned. And so I did talk about NC State on Tuesday as a potential warning for Clemson. Do I think Clemson will lose that game? No. But NC State could be pretty tough. They surprised me last year by winning eight games. They bring back most of that team. They bring back 19 starters. They're going to get their quarterback back. Their quarterback was injured for most of last season. I think he broke his leg. He's coming back. And they still won eight games a year ago. Dave Doran has always been a thorn in the side of Clemson, even if the last few games have been blowouts. And Boston College, I like a lot as well because their coach is much better than I was anticipating. I mean, they had a winning season last year in his first year during a pandemic, Jeff Hafley, and he took over a Boston College program that Steve Adazio wasn't doing much with. And then they get their quarterback back, and they get their top receiver back, and nine starters on offense. I do like Boston College. The problem for them, they have to go to Clemson. And while they gave Clemson fits last year, it was also DJ stepping in for the first time. Right, they kind of caught Clemson off guard. I think they surprised a lot of people that day. I think that was a little bit of a coming-out party for Boston College a year ago. They were only about a 500 team at the time. I think they were 4-3. I think that was a real surprise. I think Boston College will be tough this year as well. Now, will either of those two teams challenge Clemson and try to win that division? No, but they'll have good seasons. I mean, NC State, I could see them winning eight games again like a year ago. I could see Boston College getting to eight wins. They're probably the next best teams behind Clemson. When it comes to winning the ACC, of course, it's about Clemson and then seeing if Miami or UNC could challenge them. It could be, I keep saying it, could be, and that, I know that's couching the statement, right? Like my aunt could grow a mustache tomorrow. It could happen. You could say about anything. It could be a chaotic season, though, for those three factors. Because of the quarterback changes, because of the experience coming back for these teams, and because the top teams in college football have some tough games early on, and that's when you want to get them. You'd rather face Alabama week one than week 10. You'd rather face Clemson week one than week 10. All right, so on and so forth. For those three factors, this could be as chaotic or close to the 2007 season. Or it could just be as predictable as college football usually is. We'll continue to talk about this as well as those streaks in different conferences that could come to an end this year when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show. Right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Asking only workmen's wages, I come looking for a job, but I get no offers.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. As we get ready for the start of college football tomorrow, which coaches are under the most pressure this year? Because two of them will actually get underway tomorrow. We'll get to that. Plus, we've been talking this afternoon. The theme of the day has been about the potential chaos and changes in college football this year in terms of the usual suspects. They'll still be good. Let's not get this twisted. I'm not telling you Alabama's going to, you know, be a three-loss team and play in some lousy bowl, or Clemson's going to lose a bunch of games. No, these teams are still going to be good, but there's a few opportunities, there's a few banana peels in the road where they could slip up just slightly, more so than what we're used to seeing, and allow some of those second-tier teams to take another step forward. Your UNCs, your Iowa States, at least one of those teams maybe get to the playoffs, or, you know, who knows? Maybe Miami does upset Alabama next week. I don't see it coming, but I know some people are really intrigued by that game. I think it'll be a bit of a blowout. But it is the first game for Bryce Young. Alabama's got a lot of moving pieces. How's Bill O'Brien going to do with that team as the offensive coordinator? And Miami, meanwhile, same offensive coordinator, same quarterback. They have the returning pieces, while Alabama has a lot of change. But we've seen over the years, Alabama usually handles that pretty well. Alabama's usually okay dealing with those changes. Hey, last night was the 38 Special concert in North Charleston. We gave away tickets to that on the show Wednesday. Joe, are you a 38 special guy?
Yeah, that's probably my favorite of the Southern rock groups, of course. I grew up in the 80s, and
really?
They were the ones who kind of were still around from that scene, you know, after Lynyrd Skynyrd and Molly Hatchet.
Yeah, how about that? I had no idea. Let me see. I'm trying to find the set list. I only know a couple of 38 special songs anyways. But hopefully, if you won the tickets, hopefully you had a great night as they performed at the North Charleston Performing Arts Center. And the website I use does not have a set list for that show, so I can't tell you what it was like. I don't know if they still do it. I remember back in the day, back in my day when I was growing up, they used to put the set list in the newspaper. Is that something they still do? And I remember I used to, my dad would even clip some of them out for groups I was interested in if I didn't go to the concert, especially like, you know, Tom Petty, who's my guy. And anytime he came to Hartford, I think I was there. But for certain concerts in state, they put the set list in the paper the next day. That must have been a cool job. Do they send you the set list, or do you have to go to the concert and track it yourself and write down, oh, they played this song, then they played this song? Because I would like that job. Just go be the set list writer for the Post and Courier. I'll do that. I'll freelance. Send me to some shows, and I'll put the set list in the paper the next day. I don't know if that's something they even do anymore. If you went to that show last night, hopefully you had a good time for 38 Special. College football gets underway tomorrow with Week 0. Which coaches are under the most pressure? I may have done a top 10 list earlier this offseason for the coaches with the most pressure. We're not going to do some sort of top 10 list. But I'll just list off a couple of names for you because two of them are playing tomorrow. Or I should say coaching tomorrow. Their teams are playing tomorrow. Certainly Chip Kelly and also Scott Frost. Now, I love this website. I've always looked at it for years. It's called Coach's Hot Seat. You may be familiar with it. And I don't know if it's a person or a committee, and I don't really know how they do it, but they always rank the coaches by the hottest seats. They have Jim Harbaugh at number one. And I know Paul Feinbaum, I heard him on his show say that the Michigan should fire Harbaugh now. My question would just be, and we could say this about any time you make a coaching change, who are you going to get? Right? Who out there is better than Jim Harbaugh? Do we forget what Michigan was going through before Harbaugh with the other coaches? Has he gotten them to the point they were hoping? Has he met expectations? No. Has he been a better coach than they've had in close to 20 years? I'll give you Lloyd Carr. Right, Lloyd Carr did pretty well for the first part of his time at Michigan. But otherwise, right, for the last about 20 years, it's going to be hard to do better than Harbaugh. That doesn't mean you should just settle. And I know they redid his contract. There's a lot of pressure on Harbaugh. But I think this idea, and I know Feinbaum's not really like a Harbaugh guy, I think this idea of firing him now is silly. I think you just need to change your expectations and almost be a little grateful to still have him. But this is a big year. Last year was so disappointing, I'll write that off for the pandemic. Harbaugh does have pressure. He's number one on the list of the coach's hot seat. Number two is Clay Helton. Number three, Jeff Brohm. But the two coaches I mentioned, Scott Frost comes in at number four. Nebraska gets underway tomorrow. There's a lot of pressure on Frost. They brought him in as to be the savior there. And I always talk about the Peter principle. Not only for coaches who are really good coordinators that can't be head coaches, but you'll also see it in effect for coaches who are good at, say, a group of five, but not the power five. You'll bring in a coach like Brian Harsin from Boise State. We'll see how he works at Auburn. And Boise State is essentially a power five school, but it's still a little bit different. You're not playing in the SEC. He had the talent advantage every week. They took the field in the conference. When Harsin was hired, I ran through those numbers on air. Boise State, everywhere he went, they were always the better team for most of their games. Not going to be the same case. So you also have the Peter principle for coaches and different conferences. Scott Frost did a great job at UCF. Doesn't mean he'll work in the Big Ten. And now you have these issues about these this cheating scandal. If you're going to cheat, you got to at least have it lead to victories. But now Nebraska has their out. And if they're struggling, they could fire him with cause. If they prove what these accusations are claiming, they don't have to pay him, and they move on from him. That ramps up the pressure on Scott Frost. I would put Frost ahead of Harbaugh in terms of pressure. Chip Kelly and UCLA play tomorrow. He's got a lot of pressure on him. Chip Kelly, the shine has worn off Chip Kelly over the years. And after failing in the NFL, right, he went back to college, back to where he had his most success. And he probably thought, like, oh, okay, it didn't work in the NFL, but he'll come back. He'll be just fine. He's gone 10-21 at UCLA. And this year they have a fourth-year quarterback. It's his fourth year, so these are all his guys. You have players that came back from a year ago that will have some experience. You have an open Pac-12. There's not one dominant team. There are a couple of pretty interesting teams. And for Chip Kelly, the offense just hasn't quite been the same as when he was at Oregon or even when he first started at Philadelphia. Like I said, the shine has just kind of worn off. Chip Kelly has a lot of pressure. His team gets underway tomorrow. And then in terms of other coaches with pressure on them as we head into the season, yes, Harbaugh, yes, Clay Helton at USC. Clay Helton has pressure every year. It's like being the coach of the Cowboys. We're talking about your job security every year. Clay Helton needs to win, but USC to this point has been very patient with him anyways. I do think Mike Leach in the SEC. There's no SEC coach on the hot seat this year. The veteran coaches have been experienced enough. The young coaches are still young enough. Right? And they've done fairly well. Like Lane Kiffin and Pittman, you're not moving on from those guys. Leach is just heading into his second season. If there was any coach in the SEC with the most pressure on them, sure, you could tell me Kirby Smart because of the expectations and the possibility to finally go win a national championship, finally try to beat Alabama. But I do think Mike Leach has the most pressure on him in the SEC in terms of job security. I don't think he'd get fired after year two, but he's got to prove something. Last year was a disaster, but that's what happens when you come in and you make these radical changes. Jeff Collins went through it at Georgia Tech when they moved on from the option to a pro-style offense. It takes a little while to overhaul the roster, get the pieces you want. But let's not also, you know, let's not forget that as much as you may find Leach entertaining, he's never even made it to a conference championship game. This isn't like you're bringing in Jimbo Fisher, who has won a national championship before, bringing him into the SEC and thinking like, okay, we could be a little patient with this guy. Mike Leach still has to prove himself. He hasn't coached at this level. Even at the levels he was coaching at in the Pac-12, he was never one of the best teams. And what's interesting, Lane Kiffin could find this out this year as well with Ole Miss in the SEC. Ole Miss had a good year last year. I think they'll have a good year this year. But I do think you have to try to win, especially in the SEC, when we're talking about the most competitive conference. It's like a basketball player. What makes basketball players the best? Why do I think Kevin Durant's the best player in the NBA? Because he can do everything offensively. He can score any which way. Giannis may be the MVP. He may have just won the NBA championship. I don't think he's the best player in the league because while he's good on both ends of the floor, offensively, he's incredibly limited. Durant, you can't stop him. And so I look at football teams the same way. You know, like a team that, look, I broadcast for the Citadel. They run the triple option. But if the triple option, if you go up against a good run defense, a stout team, or they know how to defend the triple option, and they take away that option that day, pun intended, it's like, all right, well, what else do we got? What else can we fall back on? And sometimes you'll watch these triple option teams, and it's almost like banging your head against the wall because, you know, it's like, it's not working, right? But that's all they know how to do. It's all they can do. It's not like, okay, let's go to the spread formation and throw it all over the place because they're all over our run game today. No, you just have to hope that you grind them down. And so for Ole Miss, their defense was one of the worst in the country. They're all about throwing the football. And they're not going to beat you by running it, per se. It's about Matt Corral throwing the football. And when he does, that leads to potentially turnovers. We saw that last year when he threw about 5 interceptions in one game. So my concern for Ole Miss is almost that ceiling that, yeah, when they play well, they could beat most teams. I mean, they gave Alabama a big test. But they are so one-sided. And Mike Leach is the same way at Mississippi State. They're not going to have a good defense. They're not going to run the football very much. Mississippi State will be successful. They can throw the football. And if they go up against a team where they can't throw it or they're turning it over, they're going to be doomed. It's hard to win that way. It's like analytics in baseball, where sure, over the course of a season, you can rely on home runs, but you get to the postseason, you can't rely on home runs. It's not going to work anymore. That's not how you win a World Series. That's not how you beat the best teams in baseball. In college football, similar idea. You could beat enough teams by throwing it 70 times and not worrying about running and not playing any defense. But when you go up against an Alabama or you go up against this year a Georgia, say, or a Texas A&M, when you go against the best team, when you want to beat the best teams and win the biggest games, I think you have to be a little more versatile. I think you have to have a few more clubs in your bag. Right? The best golfers are the ones that can do – they're pretty good at a little bit of everything. They can drive it. Their short game's good. They're a good putter. You could be John Daly and bomb it off the tee, but you're not going to win very much because the rest of your game isn't good enough. Or sure, you could be the best putter on tour, but you know, if it takes you too many shots to get onto the green, who cares? That's how I look at Mississippi State and Ole Miss. In the ACC, Dino Babers is under the most pressure. He had that 10-win season for Syracuse. They've been a disaster since, and I think they'll be the worst team in the conference this year. Justin Fuente's right behind him at Virginia Tech. I already gave you Chip Kelly and Clay Helton in the Pac-12. Scott Frost in the Big Ten. Jeff Brohm's probably right behind him as well. And in the SEC, Mike Leach. I don't think anybody has too much pressure. But those are the 5 conferences and coaches that have some pressure. And as we get ready for college football, week 0 tomorrow and then week 1 next week and games on Thursday, just kind of streaming my consciousness about my thoughts on Ole Miss and Mississippi State. I like Lane Kiffin. I like Ole Miss. I think they'll be better this year. But if you want to talk about Ole Miss getting to that point where they can win an SEC championship, they had statistically, I think, a bottom five defense in the country last year. I think you still need to play a little bit of defense. I know they gave Alabama a hard time, but I read that Alabama, if Alabama went up against no defense, if they played against air, they could have only gotten 20 more yards in that game. I don't know if that's accurate. I'd have to go back through the game log. But the point being that they wherever they started, right, they, every possession ended in a touchdown. They went the whole length of the field. And they went up against a defense. If you took that defense off the field and just let Alabama scrimmage, they could have only gained 20 more yards. That was the resistance from Ole Miss that day. And that entire game, they kept them from gaining just 20 yards the entire game. Otherwise, anything else they got. I think that limits you. I think that gives you a ceiling. You can win a certain amount of games, but can you win them all? Can you win the biggest games playing that way? I don't think so. And I don't think Mike Leach works out at Mississippi State long-term either. We'll continue to talk college football with the season beginning tomorrow and this idea of these streaks, which one could potentially end this year in college football, which team could potentially be the one that surprises us most. It's the Moore Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Moore Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Let me tell you about Lyerly's Dry Cleaners, now their to-go service. They can pick up or deliver right to your home or office. They handle shirts, suits, and casual wear, as well as curtains, comforters, and regular old household laundry. Call or text them at 843-377-6994 to schedule a free pickup. And mention you heard about ESPN or heard about Lyerly's on ESPN Radio Charleston and get 20% off your next order. Lyerly's Dry Cleaners, now easier than ever before. And don't forget, the Holy Smokes Low Country Barbecue Festival going on Saturday, November 13th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Bend in North Charleston. Tickets are on sale now. $95 for general admission, $200 for VIP. Head on over to holysmokeschs.com to purchase your tickets. There'll be live music. There will be all sorts of pit masters. The lineup is a page long with people from all over the country. Get your tickets now. Holy Smokes, a Low Country Barbecue Festival on Saturday, November 13th. I don't know what the college football schedule looks like that day, but go get some barbecue beforehand. Head over to holysmokeschs.com. Did you see this story of Michael Thomas? We were talking earlier about the quarterback battle at the New Orleans Saints. And if you're a Falcons or a Panthers fan, you're always paying attention to the Saints because that's one of your direct competitors. If I was a Falcons or a Panthers fan, I was hoping that Taysom Hill would be named their quarterback. I think that makes New Orleans less of a threat. I still think the Saints missed the playoffs this year and have around a 500, if not losing season. You can't be 500 anymore with 17 games. When I say 500, what I mean is the range from 7 to 9 wins. That's what I still consider being a 500 team, because you can't be 500 anymore with 17 games. It always gets weird talking about records, right? When you talk, I think they'll be 8-8 this year. Now I got to get used to saying 9-8 or 8-9. It's very odd. I don't like change. But Michael Thomas, I don't know if it's unfair to say, and he's giving off like Antonio Brown vibes these days. Hasn't been happy with the team. Had this whole ankle situation where, you know, he got surgery later than he was supposed to, and he didn't trust the doctors of the Saints, and now he's going to miss some time, and he's not returning their calls. And then we get this story yesterday that he's now getting into a lawsuit with some landlord in L.A. He is suing a landlord in L.A. for over $1 million over a 2-month rental. It costs $60,000 a month to rent. I don't know how he gets to the $1 million figure. But he was unhappy with his stay, I guess, at this mansion that he rented out in L.A. for 2 months during the offseason to work on his ankle or to, you know, to do his offseason work. He was there for 2 months, spent $60,000 a month. That must be nice. That's $2,000 a day on just renting an offseason home for 2 months. I can't wait till I have the ability to spend $2,000 a day to stay at a house in L.A. for 2 months in the offseason. But he's suing the guy for $1 million. Now, the house, you can find it online. I mean, it's, you know, it's remarkable. It's got 8 bathrooms. You're staying there for 2 months. I don't know how big his family is. I don't know if Michael Thomas is even married. Do you really need 8 bathrooms? What house needs 8 bathrooms? How many people you got in that house? But anyways, he's suing the landlord for breach of lease, and he's asking for over $1 million in damages. But it's just been one thing after another. And it's another reason why I think the Saints take a step back this year. I don't think they have the quarterback. Their wide receiver star is, you know, causing all sorts of problems off the field with the franchise. And I'm getting some, fair or otherwise, you know, getting some Antonio Brown vibes here from everything going on with Thomas in New Orleans. He has not been happy with that organization. And now, you know, now that it's becoming a problem even off the field as well with this surgery, with this lawsuit, with these different problems. I think the Saints have a losing season. We'll wrap up your Friday when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
What a funky finish here, Football Friday, here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. This will get you fired up for the weekend. Love the Isley Brothers. I've always said Ernie Isley changed the game with the guitar work he would do in these songs. Very underrated. And I saw him earlier this year at the age of 69 play this solo behind his back, which I don't think I've ever seen that move before. I've seen the behind the head. I've seen George Thorogood play with his teeth. But I've never seen Ernie Isley put it behind his back and play it, you know, just as if he was turned around. Love the Isley Brothers. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand, ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Which allows me the opportunity, as always, to remind you that you can take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Simply stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com, through TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, or download our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store, download that bad boy, and you can listen to the show live from anywhere in the world or on demand as the podcasts are available in the app as well. And the podcasts are also available online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Appreciate listeners checking in from at least 10 different states and multiple countries on this Friday as we gear up for football. Now, I gave you my tasty top five earlier, ordering the games tomorrow for week zero in terms of most interesting. I'll be watching the games, but I'm not overly excited. I'm glad that we at least have some really interesting games week one. Tomorrow, the biggest game is Nebraska-Illinois. You get two Big Ten teams. It's the best matchup on paper. They're not good teams, but it could be a good matchup. You also have two of the coaches who are under some of the most pressure this year debuting tomorrow, with UCLA and Chip Kelly and the aforementioned Nebraska with Scott Frost. Both guys need to start with a win. You also have Eastern Illinois, South Carolina's week one opponent, playing Indiana State tomorrow night on ESPN Plus at 6 o'clock. You could do some scouting. Eastern Illinois has won two games over the last 2 years. Indiana State has not played in 644 days. That will be an interesting football game. Interesting in the sense of, okay, how ugly will this get? And we'll see what we get out of Eastern Illinois. Don't expect much of a pushback from them next Saturday in Columbia whatsoever. And we also have a lot of large lines in week zero tomorrow. Right? These games, the spreads are all pretty large. Now, they can't on ESPN. When you go to ESPN, I love that ESPN.com doesn't even, when you go to the scoreboard, they don't even include week zero. The week zero, I like it, the idea, but let's just call it week one. Let's call it what it is. There is no week zero. Don't pre-board before you actually board, right? When you board, that's getting on the plane. There doesn't need to be a pre-board. There's no patient zero. Just call them patient one. But Nebraska's favored by 7. I would take Nebraska. And I've been telling myself, right, don't put any money on any of these week zero games. Wait for the actual games of interest. I think Nebraska wins and covers the touchdown on the road. I think Fresno State covers the 27.5 against UConn, blowing them out. And UCLA, favored by 17.5 at home against Hawaii, I think I'd even take UCLA. That could be a bit of an intriguing game of those two offenses. Looking forward to having football back with week zero tomorrow. And then next week, we will fully dive in and completely gear up for week one and the real interesting college football games. But it all begins tomorrow, and I'm looking forward to it. Enjoy your football weekend. Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we say goodbye. We'll say hello again Monday at noon. as we continue to get ready for the football season. It's the Lamar Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.